This is Red Podcast, episode 254. The manuscript is back in my hands, going to the final edit. I'm going to tell you all about that. That's coming up.
This is the Red Podcast. Here's your host, David Hooper.
The manuscript is back. I'm going to talk about that. I'm going to talk about the final editing pass. Also have a forward update. Talk about where it is now. 93,000 words. This is the note that the editor sent me. This looks really good. It's very clean. The last thing I did was sweep through it for inconsistencies like M dashes and hyphens. There's some font and spacing inconsistencies, but whoever formats this should be able to manage that with the settings they use. Great job on this. I think you're good to go. I was surprised at how done it was. I was surprised about the note, first of all. I thought I was going to have to give a good couple of weeks going through this. Also, it didn't seem that she did a whole lot to it. I mean, she did, but we're talking about maybe the fourth revision with these two editors. I had two content editors that worked as a team. They looked over this version. Not a ton of corrections to do. At this point, I'm more worried about making it worse than better. I thought about that medical saying, first do no harm. Because the next step is a line edit, a light line edit, maybe a proofread even. And I've been interviewing editors, more on that in a second. But bottom line is that you can make this thing a lot worse than it is right now if you've got the wrong editor. Here's what this status means. So got it back. It looks good. That means quicker to the actual proofing, to the line edit. That's really been my focus for the last few days. I mentioned it in the last episode. My normal guy, this is a guy I've done probably, I don't know, half a dozen projects with. He couldn't do it. He didn't give me a specific recommendation of somebody who could do it, but he did give me a site on where I could find good people, which I guess was a society, the American Society of Editors, something like that, ACES. And that was fine. But the interesting thing about it was, I mean, I think it was kind of like a life coaching site. If you've been to like a general life coaching site, maybe, and it's like, I'm a coach and I'm a life coach. I mean, sometimes the people on that site, they weren't real specific about what they could do. They were editors. I wanted somebody that I knew if I handed over 93,000 words to them, like I said, do no harm. They're not going to make it worse. And I talked to a few people on that site and didn't really leave there feeling like I knew the process and how any of them worked. So what I ended up doing is I ended up on Upwork. Upwork.com is the domain name. It's a freelancer site. I had a question of what was needed. That was another thing that brought me to Upwork because there are different types of editing. As I mentioned, I wanted a light line edit, meaning that the content editing, all the content for the book and what goes where and does it need to be moved around, that was already done. That's what I'd had an initial editor help me with, and then my editing team, Paula and Cindy, helped me with. I wanted a line editing, more of a proofreading. There's some slight differences there. I don't know what they are. I think there's the dictionary definition of this stuff, what other people call it, because I've worked with people that would say I needed a line edit, and I've worked with other people that would say that what I'm getting is a proofread. So there was a little bit of confusion on who I needed to get to the job and how I needed to post the job. That was an interesting issue with finding somebody. The other thing is that every manuscript, especially one this long, is different. And needs are not black and white. You're not going to the widget factory and saying, I need 1,000 widgets. You've got 93,000 words. And your 93,000 words are different than the other guy's 93,000 words. I put a lot of time and effort into this. Other people have put a lot of time and effort into this. This thing was pretty good. In fact, here's a comment that I got from an editor. She said, this is incredibly clean. It's well-written, well-formatted. If you're shooting for traditional publishing, any editor would be happy to get a manuscript this clean. That made me feel good. And I had various comments like that. What I did is I took the first three chapters and I took the last chapter and I handed them off. I said, here's a sample of the writing. Here's how it begins. Here's how it ends. And I wasn't looking for anybody to do any kind of sample edit, but I did have people hand those sample edits back to me with their markups. And that was kind of a double-edged sword because on one hand, I got to see how they would work, But on the other hand, it gets you questioning what it is that you've done. And there were some edits that I liked and some edits that I didn't like from the same person. So it made me wonder, like, how did I ever get through this before? I don't think I've ever really cared about a book manuscript like this. And I've been through this process a few times. I talked about it here on a previous episode in that this is the longest book that I've done. This is the longest time period that I've spent working on a book. And this is a new market for me. This is a brand new market, something that I'm not known for. So I feel a lot of pressure wanting to get this thing out and making it the most perfect manuscript that it can be. Books are not perfect. Any published book you find is going to have some kind of typo, some kind of misinformation. Even if you put it out today and the information is perfect, information changes. So what's perfect today may not be perfect in a week or two. That brings up the issue of how much editing is needed. I tend to over-edit, not out of perfection, but out of past experience. My very first book, 1999, didn't have a pro editor. Had a couple people look it over, a couple people that were maybe good at English. If you've ever done any writing, maybe you've had that kind of experience. Oh, yeah, yeah. I look at books all the time. That's what they'll tell you. Oh, errors just pop out to me. I can help you. Have your friends look it over. That was a huge mistake. Since then, I've been working with professional editors. But even then, my previous book, it's been about 5 years ago now. I used an editor that I'd worked with dozens of times. I got the galley copy, a rough print, if you're not familiar with that term. I thought it was ready to go. Handed it off to a friend. Hey, just double check this for me, will you? Several obvious errors within the first 10 or 20 pages. I flipped, man. I needed to get this thing out. I'd already had it laid out. I got nervous. Brought in 3 proofreaders, sent that version to each of them. Each came back with different things. I put all the fixes together. So you can see why I'm a bit nervous. Had 3 proofreaders read the same thing, 3 good proofreaders, and they're all coming back with different stuff. It's never going to be perfect, but still, I need it to be good. Never perfect, but when is good enough? That's the thing that I struggle with. There's a lot of pressure on me. Now I know better. This isn't 1999. I'm not going to just throw it out there and trust it. It's not a blog post, something I can go back to. Fairly permanent. If I find something wrong, I can go back in and edit it, lay it out again, reissue it. The bottom line, I think, is that I just have to press through. It's not going to be perfect. What I ended up doing, and this is kind of funny because I was thinking this intuitively when I went and posted the job. I said, you know what I need is I need somebody like from a newspaper, somebody who can go through a ton of text, make sure that it's easy to understand, and make sure there are no big, obvious, major errors, something that nobody would disagree about. That's what I ended up going with. She's got that final 93,000 words from me. She is working on it now. I'll have an update on that soon. Let me give you a Ford update. I talked about getting turned down on my Ford request. Well, I guess I've been turned down on a few of them. Just this is the one who actually wrote back. And that was frustrating. If you want more information on that, listen to the previous episode. I've got one more guy that I think will be a perfect match. I reached out to him. I have not heard back. I'm not sure the people that I'm not hearing back from are actually getting my messages. I don't know. There's no way to tell. This is a guy that I've connected to, actually grew up with him. I've known him a long, long time. And I don't have a phone number for him. Could I look it up? Yeah, but I'm not going to stalk him. He's busy. He's a professional guy. I emailed him with an email address that I think is accurate. I don't want it to be weird, strain the relationship. I mean, I know this guy. He'll know me. Have several stories if you ask him about me, but I don't know him that well. This is a guy that I went to school with. I grew up with him, but we haven't kept in touch. It's been several years since I've seen him. What I'm thinking about doing now, no forward. Something that I learned from my work in the music industry is that if you sell albums on your own, say you do it independently, then you get attention for your album. Then you get attention for your music, your band. Then the record deal comes. Works with books too. You see that sometimes with independent books. Somebody puts out a release on his own, sells a ton of them, then book publishers come in, the movie, film, television deals, they start to emerge. People get interested in something that has momentum. Same thing with this book. So one of the things that I'm considering doing is putting the book out with no forward, being open to people who want to come in and do a forward later. And if that happens, great. If it doesn't, great. This book doesn't need a forward. I talked about this on the last episode. I think it will help me to get maybe some credibility, social proof, if you want to call it that, within this new market. But if not, it's not going to kill the book. The content of the book stands on its own. I don't need a Ford to sell this book. It's more important for me to get this book out than to have a Ford in it. That is the bottom line. I think the right person would help, but it's not a deal breaker for me. So to wrap this one up, just let me tell you the general feeling. Man, this feels good. This is starting to feel real. I'm surprised at how great it feels. I'm actually surprised at how relaxed I was when I got this file edit back, man, because this thing's been going on for 4 years. I thought I was going to be done in 3-4 months. I thought it was going to be a quick book. I think the original plan was maybe 20,000 words. I was going to do a quick and dirty manual, which is some lessons that I knew about marketing and how they would work for podcasting. See, that's the interesting thing with my background, just to share with you real quick. Being in the music industry, we were the ones that had online content as far as selling online content first. We were selling music online back in the late 90s. You could go to a store like emusic.com. You could give them your dollar, download a song, and eventually you put it on MP3 player, iPod, whatever. Apple came in with the iTunes store. We were the first people to get involved with iTunes. Then eventually, of course, they started doing books on the Apple store. They've got apps. They've got film. They've got television. We were the first industry to do digital content. So I know a lot about it. I've worked in all these industries because of my work in the music industry. That's what got me into broadcasting, which got me into podcasting. It's what got me into books because the book people started coming to me. Hey, man, what's working for music? What have you learned with the arrows in your back going through this thing and being the pioneers of online distribution? What can we learn from you so we don't have to make the same mistakes? That got me into books. That got me into film and TV once like the bandwidth and the compression and all those things started coming around where we could actually download these huge, huge files. You see, that was the progression. We had music that we can listen to online through computer speakers. Then we had these mobile players that could play music. Those were the first mobile players. Then we had the compression and the video formats. That was starting to come up. We could play movies on computers. We could maybe burn them to DVD. That wasn't worked out yet. While that was happening, the book appliances came along. I'm talking about things like Kindle, Kobo, and of course, eventually podcasting. That was very complicated at first. These days, you have a mobile phone, you download it, you play it, you subscribe to it, you review it. You do all those things from one device, and it's so much easier than it used to be. You know, back in the day, in case you're new to podcasting, you used to have an iPod, and you would plug it into your iTunes software on your computer. Then the thing would sync up. You'd manually move podcasts that you hadn't listened to from your computer over to the iPod. It would only hold maybe 30 minutes. You wouldn't be able to listen to a podcast like this with a lot of different episodes very easily because you have to go back, plug it in, download it, sync it, unplug it, listen to it. It's so much easier than it used to be. And having that perspective got me into all this. So I was going to talk about that perspective, the things that I've learned that a lot of people have forgotten, but that still work when it comes to getting people to your content. Because you can imagine, if it's tough to access your content, and it was very, very tough for a long time, we had to get really good about driving people to that content and making them interested. And now that it's easier, these are kind of like long-lost secrets. I was going to share some of those in that original 20,000-word book. Well, what you start, not what you finish. Ended up writing about 120,000, 130,000 words on this thing. Of course, the edit, as I mentioned, 93,000 words. So I had to go in there, make sure everything's clean, crisp, clear, something that you actually want to read. And that was a lot of work. And I'm surprised at how good it feels to be done. Not because I don't like the work, but I'm excited to bring this to you. It's been a long time coming. I believe in this. I'm going to be hitting the road in the upcoming year and doing a lot more content like this. That's one of the reasons that you haven't heard from me here on Build a Big Podcast, because I've been working on other stuff, man. I'm excited to actually get back into podcasting. I don't want to be one of those guys that talks about podcasting but never does it. I'm a podcaster and a marketer first, and I want to get out and market this book, and I want to do that via podcasting, which is what the book is about. So it is a huge relief. This book is almost done. It should be out in 1-3 months. Probably have it on a pre-release, and I will have a special on that in about a month. So I will keep you updated on that, and I will keep you updated on the process as we go along. Still got a few more of these to do. If you want to be updated, subscribe to Red Podcast. Go to redpodcast.com. You'll see 3 links. There's one to Google Podcasts. There's one to Apple Podcasts. There is an RSS feed. If you want to be old school about it, wherever you get your podcast, I will get a podcast to you. So go to redpodcast.com. If you're interested in podcasting, you want to see what I'm doing in that area, I've got a website at bigpodcast.com. In fact, I've got another podcast that talks solely about podcast marketing. So if you're interested in expanding what you're doing, letting people know about your expertise through podcasting, I can help you there at bigpodcast.com. Got some podcast episode templates available to you there, as well as some other resources. So check that out, redpodcast.com or bigpodcast.com. I don't care, but go to one of them. Let's get connected, and I will see you on the next episode.
You've been listening to Red Podcast. Never miss an episode. Subscribe now with your iPhone, Android, or via RSS at redpodcast.com.